You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Phone lines are there for you. Looking for a reaction to Kobe Bryant from people. A lot of people texting in today. They're all over the map. Some incredibly heartbroken. Some want to take shots. Whatever you're feeling is fair game, I guess. If you want to call in, share your thoughts on Kobe Bryant. Maybe you've got a memory, a specific moment in his career that really stood out to you that made you appreciate him on a different level, or just his tenacious mentality. I mean, there are very few athletes you hear about that have that, I mean, just above and beyond tenacity that he had. And that was a Jordan trait. We used to hear that about Jordan, mm-hmm. about, you know, he'd create conflict that didn't really exist, but he would create it. Sort of like Richard Sherman. You know, just creating, there's a conflict there. Now this guy is my mortal enemy, and I got to take him down by any means necessary. That's kind of the mentality that these guys have. But
you know, really quick, I wanted to say the thing that makes guys like that special, I think, and same thing with Russell Wilson, is usually, I know for me, it came from some kind of somebody doubting me or somebody, or some kind of adversity. Like my
injuries.
My knee in college, I mean, they were like, there's no way that you're going to ever play again. And there's, you know, a good chance you're probably going to walk with a limp and all this stuff. So, yeah, that was there built in for me. Mm-hmm. But these guys, they create it. You know, and so like
Russell, they manufacture it.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, that's the thing about Kobe. I just thought he was the most clutch scorer, and he could do it from anywhere. He could slash. He could shoot. I mean, he was an amazing
relentless
competitor.
421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Your thoughts on Kobe Bryant. Let's start in Auburn. Casey's been waiting patiently. Casey, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Can't start a conversation with you without saying go Cougs to Jim first. But,
hey, go Cougs.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Hey, I wanted to just talk for a second. I mean, so a couple things about how Kobe affected my life. I'm 34 years old, so I was growing up at the time when he was really dominating. And a couple things, you know, when I moved away to college and my mom was starting to get rid of all the stuff in my room, the big box full of basketball and baseball cards was one of the things that was going to get tossed out with everything else. And I got to go through and pick out some of the stuff I wanted to keep that would take up minimal space or whatever. But one of the ones that made the cut for sure was all the Kobe Bryant rookie cards that I had. Mm. And another way that he affected me, you know, I tore my Achilles at 30. And I can just remember him being in the game and tearing his Achilles and still wanting to finish the game out and arguing with the coaches and basically forcing them to let him back in the game and shooting free throws with the torn Achilles. Never seen anything like that in sports. It's pretty crazy. So to this day, me and my girlfriend, when we throw stuff away from across the room into the garbage can, we still yell Kobe. I have a 5.5-month-old son, and I promise you he'll yell Kobe anytime he shoots a hoop and he gets in someone's face.
Good stuff, Casey. Appreciate the phone call. That opens up a line, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Your reaction, your thoughts, your memories of Kobe Bryant, obviously an incredibly tragic story taking place over the weekend. excuse me, his 13-year-old daughter passing away, and then seven other people. Initially, it was just five, and then it's not the story is that it's nine total people. I mean, just brutal. You're talking about parents and children being on that helicopter in addition to him. So we don't know the names. We don't know the faces. We didn't grow up with them the way you did with Kobe Bryant, so the connection's completely different, but nonetheless, incredibly tragic.
Yeah, one of the baseball coach from Orange Coast College, his wife
Antebelli,
and daughter. John Altobelli, and then I was just reading a story about him, and he coached a bunch of players in the Cape Cod League, including Braden Bishop of the Mariners, and yeah, just going. I mean, we've done this. We talked about in the opening segment too. I mean, a lot of us who have kids that are in sports, and we're just. Like, we just got back from Las Vegas and all the fun that you have, and you just pictured everybody getting on the helicopter and going to play in another game. And his daughter, from what I understand, is really one of the best players, one of the best 13-year-old players in the country, and wanted to play in the WNBA someday. But just on a dad level, you just think about daughter being there, and then the daughters that are left behind, too, a 17-year-old daughter that Kobe Bryant has, and then two that'll never know their dad because one of them was 3 years old and one of them was just born last summer. And so they'll never know. They'll hear a lot about their dad through stories and from people who knew him when he was alive. But, man, just heartbreaking, especially, you know, thinking about a dad leaving his family behind.
Yeah, and for the wife, that's who I feel
I can't
for,
even imagine.
Gosh.
What, I mean, yeah just, no way to even relate to what she must be feeling, thinking, going through right now. I have no idea. How do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, I saw Joe Fan from NBC Sports Northwest. He tweeted something about it. I was thinking my wife was saying the same thing. So you have to be strong for your kids, and yet you're grieving at the same time. So,
unbelievable. 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Out to Lacey. Dave is with us. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great, man. How are you? What do you got for us?
Oh, I was actually down at the Mamba Sports Academy yesterday with my granddaughter, who was playing in that basketball tournament. And it was, you know, we were having a great weekend. We were playing in the championship game of the 12 and under age bracket. His daughter actually plays in the 13 under bracket. But right in the middle of the game, I got a call from my daughter in Virginia, and she asked me if Kobe was there, and I said, of course he's here, you know, he's coaching his daughter. And she said, oh, we just saw a weird thing that he had got killed in a car wreck, and in a helicopter crash. And I said to her, well, I haven't seen him this morning, but, you know, I'm just assuming that he's here. And so we continue on, and I'm starting to search the internet to see what I can find, and I couldn't find anything, so I was was texting her back saying that, you know, I'm going to call BS on that because I haven't seen anything. And just before I even got a chance to send that text, they halted all the games and called everybody to the court number four, where everybody kneeled down and we all said a prayer. And it was a very somber experience. I'm not a real big basketball fan, except for my granddaughter, of course. You could just feel it in the air. It was really touching.
Yeah. Good stuff, Dave. Appreciate the phone call. That opens up the line, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Out to Yakima. Josh is here. Hey, Josh.
Hey, guys. How are you doing this evening?
We're doing all right, man. What do you got for us today?
Well, you know, it was really a tragedy what happened yesterday with Kobe and his daughter going down the way they did, you know. Basically, I want to compare Kobe to another one of our other athletes that's a class act guy that stayed with the same franchise, you know, for his full career, and that's Derek Jeter, somebody just went to the hole, you know, and they both basically kind of, you know, epitomized their franchises, you know, put their heart on their sleeve and, you know, basically were the team captains, you know. They set the catalyst for their championship teams. Regardless of Kobe playing with Shaq, yeah, he was there. He might have been the muscle and the diesel and the engine, but you got to have a conductor to run that diesel. You know what I'm saying? Got to have somebody that go-to guy and get those morale points. You know, that's why I look at Kobe. He always played with his heart. You know, and that's one thing I can give the guy props. That back in the day, I used to give him crap because he always shoot like 30 or 40 shots. But then I was thinking, well, who else do they have on Lakers? And that was after Shaq was gone, you know. It was like, who else do they got on Lakers that can shoot the percentage that he was able to shoot, you know. And it's not like he developed a crappy game. He had one of the best post-up games. I mean, he developed it right from Michael Jordan's standpoint, you know, the backing down the guy and posting him up and then, you know, shooting that fadeaway that he lived off of for, you know, 10, 15 years, however long he was able to do it for. And, you know, and what a way to go out on his last game of the season. I don't know exact numbers. I think it was like, didn't he hit 60 on his last game of his career?
Mm-hmm.
And that's phenomenal. You know, for a guy, you know, he's 41, I'm 41. I'm thinking he went down in a plane crash or helicopter crash, and that's crazy, man. And I thought about getting myself on a chopper here in the next year, and I'm like, oh, do I really want to do that? You know what? I'm going to do it just because Kobe did it, and that's, if I have to go into the flames, then so be it. God intended that. You know what I'm saying? You don't live life to be scared. Live life to the fullest. Kobe's basically told us to do.
Josh, so, appreciate the phone call.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Josh, and I hope nothing happens in that setting. I don't think you look to that and say, well, if he did it, I want to do it. You're looking for a better outcome than something like that.
Yeah. And then Josh was referring to 60 points, his final game of his career at the age of 37 against the Utah Jazz. And some were wondering about the Jazz's defensive effort that night, but I don't think that was the case when he scored 81 against Toronto.
Well, there was no defensive effort in that game. I was watching that game.
The Jazz game or the 81 point game?
No, the Toronto one, 81 points. It was ridiculous. Kobe's one of the greatest to ever play the game. That's not diminishing him at all, but that was their defense was reprehensible in that game, and they were, don't you remember, they were just being ripped.
No, well, I remember the last game of his career, it seemed like the Jazz were letting him go to the hoop.
Yeah, but I don't, for whatever reason, that one's not as vivid as the Toronto game, the 81-point game. I don't, maybe just because it was the end, but.
Well, 20-year career, and there's only 2 years where he wasn't an All-Star.
Yeah, he's a ridiculous career.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Well, that 1 year, 2005-06, averaging 35 points a game.
Yeah. So. Out to Mill Creek, Brandon is with us. Hey, Brandon.
Hello. Hey, this might hurt a lot of Seattle fans more because after the Sonics left, we didn't really have an NBA team. A lot of NBA teams, like you could easily go to the Portland Trailblazers, but I found myself obsessing over Kobe Bryant because of one, his mama mentality. I just want people to look at him more as a basketball player than he had so much of his life ahead of him. He was an Academy Award winning artist. He was a great father to four daughters, and I just want people to look at him not just for his basketball career, but who he was as a person, and realize that same tenacity he brought on the court, he brought to his children too. And he was a great father. And my 12-year-old daughter's name's Kobe. Mm. My favorite number is 24. For about a 7-8 year period of time, I obsessed over this man because of the inspiration that he gave me to become a better person. So I just want people to look at him as more than just a basketball player, and RIP to my hero. Everything, he meant everything to me for a good 7 or 8 period of stretch.
Good stuff, Brandon. Appreciate it, my friend. That opens up a line, 421-3776, toll free, 866-979-3776. He was, it was a weird thing to be an NBA fan after the Sonics left, because you didn't really have a team. There wasn't a natural fallback, right? Okay, well, now I'm a Blazers fan, or now I'm a Lakers fan. It was kind of a free-for-all. I became a Celtics fan because, A, Ray Allen went there. I loved Ray Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Garnett was one of my all-time favorite players, and I loved Doc Rivers. So that was just natural. I'm like, all right, it's the Celtics for me. And then once they disbanded, I don't have a team, but that became my rooting interest. So I get you follow a particular player. He was a Kobe fan. That makes sense. Did you guys have a fallback? Did you start rooting for a team or a specific player after the Sonics left?
No, not really. I mean, it's kind of weird. I was a Charlotte Hornet fan for some reason. I loved
Kendall Gill, Larry Johnson guy,
Muggsy Bogues.
Muggsy Bogues.
And
you
love
the little
Bogues.
Guys.
Muggsy Bogues.
You love Altuve.
And
you love Muggsy.
Grandmama.
Yeah, Larry Johnson.
Yeah, Larry Johnson. I loved him too. So, yeah, and I have like a big pullover Charlotte Hornet.
Some great play. Alonzo Mourning was there.
Yeah.
Kendall Gill was
Del
there.
Curry.
Yeah. Yep. Some good players go through there.
Yeah, but for some reason that was just and then I loved Duke. I'm one of the few people that loved Duke basketball that didn't go there. You know, everybody loves to hate them, but I just love those guys. But yeah, it's kind of weird how you just adopt a team, but you know, usually it's because of a guy like Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, for me it was Garnett and Ray Allen going to Boston.
Yeah.
That became an easy one. Did you have a rooting interest after the Sonics left?
I didn't. No, I didn't. But I'm just looking at Kobe's career. It ended in 2016. And so, yeah, the last 8 years, we didn't see him here in Seattle. I mean, many things that you miss out on. I just can't believe that it's gone on here. We're going on 12 years now.
Brutal. Let's see. Out to Seattle. Terrell's with us. Terrell,
hey,
how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. What's up? How you doing, fellas?
We're good, man. What do you got?
Hey man, one, I miss you guys, man. I haven't been listening, man, since we lost to the Green Bay Packers. But that's a whole nother story. But my thing is, I'm a Michael Jordan fan, man, and I'm a LeBron fan. But it was really hard for me to root for Kobe, you know, just because they were a Western Conference rival for so many years. But the one thing that attracted him to me, you know, to Kobe was it was just his will to win, man. Like, outside of all the other BS, he's arrogant, he's this, that, and the third, there was just something about him that just showed that he wants to win. It's almost like that Russell Wilson effect is just something in him that just says when the time is to go, he goes. And it's just admirable to even be able to witness that, to witness him and Michael Jordan in the lifetime. It's crazy.
Yeah, you saw some special basketball, certainly. Terrell, good stuff, man. Appreciate the phone call. Try to get in a few more before the break here. Let's see. Tyson and Ording is with us. Tyson, welcome to the show.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate you taking my call on the
before big, the break here.
You got to turn the radio down, man.
Oh, sorry about that. I think we got it now. Okay. So I just wanted to say, you know, in my lifetime, I'm 25 years old. You know, there's few athletes that I think you can think of as somebody who would be on the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of sports of my generation. And you know, as somebody who wasn't necessarily a diehard Kobe fan, I've seen the world essentially come to a complete, you know, a complete stop over these last 48 hours. And I think that just, you know, pays tribute to who Kobe was as an athlete, as a person, you know, in my generation coming up. You know, I didn't live in the era of Jordan, but, you know, I can say that there's one athlete that you think of who was, you know, known on a first name basis, and that's Kobe. And, you know, on or off the court, his impact, I think, will live on forever.
Good stuff, Tyson. Appreciate it. Yeah, when, you know, as soon as you hear Kobe, one name. That's a very select group of people who can go, you say one name, you know exactly who you're referencing, right? I mean, it's Michael, it's Kobe, it's, like I said, Madonna, Cher, you know, it's,
yeah.
These one word, Bono, you know, go
yeah.
to.
Well, yeah, and it was never, Jim. It was, Jim. Yeah, I mean, it was just Kobe. You didn't hear Bryant that often.
No,
it was
just,
and everybody knew who Kobe was. And
transcended the sport, man. And if you had any doubt about that, look at the reaction from players in all kinds of other sports. Whether you're talking about soccer, they were showing soccer, you know, guy scores a goal and then he puts up the 2-4 after he scores it yesterday. And you know, every other sport outside of the world of sports. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's well beyond just being, yeah, he's one of the great players on the court.
The tributes across the country and across the world, really, were tremendous. I mean, we talked about it earlier, the teams that were taking 24-second violations and the 8-second mid-court violation in honor of his numbers and everything else. The Dallas Mavericks, they'll never have another number 24 on their roster, according to Mark Cuban. And so it's... Yeah, the outpouring has just been terrific.
One more before the break out in Yakima. Travis has been waiting. Travis, welcome to the show. All right. That's the end of Travis. Right,
Travis, he had enough.
He froze up.
Travis said he was one of those guys that you love to hate. You respect his game, but if he's not on your team.
Yeah, that's the ultimate sign of respect. Hate that guy because they're so good. They always beat you.
The only reason on the court, anyway, that I sometimes... He kind of had a little bit of a feud with Shaq, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I loved Shaq.
I was a big Shaq guy, too.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, and they mended the fences. They'd gotten past that. But, yeah, there was a while there where Shaq's up there rapping on stage and taking shots at Kobe. And, yeah, there was a back and forth there that wasn't great. And you wonder how great that team could have been if that chemistry was just perfect, right?
Just better.
Yeah, if Shaq worked harder, because that was Kobe's problem with him, is that he didn't always put himself in the best position physically to dominate. And, you know, Shaq had issues with Kobe in the way he played. But if they could have kept that going, how dominant could that duo have been?
Yeah, it was nice to hear from Shaq yesterday, though, saying that I love you and you will be missed. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear that they work things out.
All right, coming up, Jim wrote a story on 710sports.com. Again, that's 710sports.com. Yeah, 710sports.com. Explaining why the Seahawks should not trade down in the draft this year. It's what they like to do. They like to accumulate picks. They like to trade down. He's saying, don't do it. Don't do it, Schneider. He'll explain next. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Hey, a reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. So Jim wrote a new story. It's available at 710sports.com.
710sports.com.
Thank you, Dave. Explaining why the Seahawks should not trade down in the draft this year. This has been their tendency, right? They did draft L.J. Collier last year. So far, not feeling great about that one, but still a lot of time left. Maybe it turns into a great pick. But typically, that's what they tend to do. They accumulate picks. They trade out of the first round because being a playoff team, you tend to be at the bottom of the end of the first round. So
they only had, what, four picks going
four
into
picks,
the draft last
Frank
year?
And Clark, trades are made. So they turn that into a big number for them. But
let's see what you think of this rationale, because I was just looking at, okay, so round one, 27th overall, and as you just laid out, they've struggled a little bit at that spot. And understandably, because it's hard to get just a premier player late in the first round, although you could argue that,
one in the second round with DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf. Fetty, I don't know what you think of him. You got him late in the first round.
Yeah,
so I
James
mean,
Carpenter was a late first round.
Yeah, they've had some hits and misses, just like any other team. But I was just thinking, based on what they have going into this, they've got a second round pick too. They've actually got two second round picks. They've got their own, and then they have one that's the less favorable of Kansas City and San Francisco in the second round, because of the trade. I think maybe with D Ford, and I'm not exactly sure how that came about, but they're still going to have another second rounder. They're going to get they have a third rounder projected for Earl Thomas, a compensatory pick that they got for Earl Thomas signing with Baltimore. And then they also have two picks in the fourth round, their own pick, and then a comp pick projected for Justin Coleman signing with the Lions. That's a long warm up here. For what I'm getting at is that I just feel like you have enough draft capital that you could move up in the first round. And I'm honestly just kind of tired of the Seahawks just going for depth guys, you know, guys that you go, yeah, he's a really good special teamer and he's a good backup linebacker and he's really a solid citizen on the team, you know, those types of players, and you like having them. And I think you've built up enough of that with guys, you've built up enough depth that I think now it's kind of time to just have a wild hair and go for it and say, okay, we're going to trade the 27th overall and we're also going to give you a second rounder and a fourth rounder. And I'm not sure, there's those tables out there. Somebody was saying Jimmy Johnson has a chart that shows you exactly how far up you could go based on what you're giving another team. But I would think that if you're giving up your 27th overall with a second rounder and a fourth rounder, that you could move up in the teens, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still with me on this, Dave?
Does he look like he's fading?
No, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to contact John Schneider so that he can tune in.
I like that he noticed you might be drifting.
Now, what? My grand finale here is, don't you think that if you're picking at 13 or 14 or 15, you have a better chance of hitting a potential superstar than if you're drafting at 27? And don't you feel like this team is due to hit for a potential superstar? And so why not increase the odds by moving up this year? And if you did what I'm suggesting that John Schneider should do, you'd still have a second rounder and a fourth rounder anyway.
Right.
Okay, because you have two in each of those rounds.
Well, you know, and I would say this, that I think there are those in the NFL that feel like not all first-round picks are created equal. I mean, just because you have a first-round pick, I mean, if you get in the top half, that's where you get really, really good players. Bosa, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We realize how good that guy is.
Yeah.
He didn't play like a rookie, man. Never.
And how long
like
you have to deal with him in your division?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
So, who's that this year? Is it Chase Young? Is he the guy that...
That's what I've heard.
But you're going too high for him.
Yeah,
right?
He's
going
to be two.
No, I'm just trying to figure out who this year's Bosa is. It feels like it's Chase Young.
Chase Young, yeah. Somebody was saying they felt like he was the... Yeah, you probably have to trade a lot away to get that. But somebody, you know, the scouting community feels that he's like the best prospect since Patrick Mahomes. So, and I know that's not that far away, but, you know, it's in that same category. That guy made it look so effortless to get a sack.
Talking about Young or Bosa?
Young.
Young, okay.
I was watching him, you know, at Ohio State, and it's just like, gosh, it's almost like I don't see anything that spectacular. He just goes around the edge and gets there. And then, you know, when he's throwing his hands off of him, that's stuff you don't see until you get to the next level. And so, yeah, just an incredible talent. So if you're able to get a guy like that, but I would say, you know, maybe that's what they do, Jim. I mean, they may feel that way, but I was just looking at Yannick Ngakoue. But let's say you do what you're talking about and you get a top-rated defensive end in the draft, or you go and get a guy like that and then put Clowney on the other side of him. He's got 37.5 sacks, Ngakoue does.
How old did you say he was again?
He's 24 years old.
24.
That's all he is?
Yeah. And he's been in the league for 4 years, but, he's got 14 forced fumbles, 37 and a half sacks, you know, ton of tackles. And then, you know, he's got actually a touchdown and a couple of interceptions. So, I mean, the guy is a great player and one of those quick twitch edge guys. You put him opposite Clowney, that's pretty much all you need, I think, on defense. I mean, that would just be, obviously, you need more. You need to get more D-line. Maybe they don't re-sign Jaren Reed, you know, but I feel like they got to do something kind of drastic to
a splash.
Do you guys feel like, and it sounds like you think this, Jim, I'm wondering if you agree, that there's a lot of youth we saw this year that we feel like is going to turn into something, whether you're talking about Marquise Blair, you're talking about
Cody Barton.
Barton, thank you. We know DK Metcalf. He certainly was shining this year, and maybe Ursua, maybe some of these other
Amadi.
I mean, you had all your draft picks essentially make the roster, contribute, with the exception of Jennings and Haynes and Christmas. But
you still like Haynes.
Yeah, you still like him. His injury got in the way. It just feels like you're counting on a lot of the youth that you already had. So. Yeah. Is this a year where you feel like, okay, you got to use every one of those picks and maybe get a couple more picks and add more to the pile? Or do you start going, okay, let me get one really, what I feel like is one gem here instead of three pretty goods? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
If you want to put it in, I do anyway, card terms. I mean, you're looking for aces and kings rather than maybe tens and jacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they're in that spot that there's enough youth and depth there currently?
Well, and Schneider would say, well, no kidding. You're always looking for aces and kings.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, they're drafting guys like Rasheem Green because they feel like he can be that guy at some point. I don't think he is. I think he's a really solid guy that you can have on your team for 10, 12 years.
He's a 10, and he's between a jack and a 10.
And a 10?
Yeah. That's where I'd put him right now.
Are you suited? I mean,
am I what?
Are you suited?
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
You got a possible flush?
I'm just looking at the strength of a diamonds. Single card. I'm not looking at the hand. What is he? Is he a jack? Is he a 10? Is he a queen?
Well, aren't you sick of jacks and 10s? I mean, you like jacks and 10s on your team.
I'm with you on this. I'm saying that's how I view green.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I view green right now.
But I just feel like if you got one really top-end pass rusher, it would totally change how you feel.
And then you brought Clowney back.
Yeah,
because we've already determined you – just bringing him back, and if they bring Reed back, okay, that's all great. But that's who you already had, and you weren't good. You need to add to that as well. And then if they leave or you can't bring them back, you got to replace that and still add. I mean, we can't look at it and say, man, big off season. They brought Clowney back. They got Reed back. They're sitting pretty.
Do you really want Reed back, though? Do you see that as being essential?
Well, I told Dave during the break, he's one of those players I'm a little fearful of. Right now, I feel like, if they said, no, we're not paying 14 or whatever he wants, 14, 15, if they said, no, we're going to let him go.
Who's going to pay him that okay off of the season he had?
Well, maybe nobody.
But you feel like he's going to go somewhere and
ball
out?
He's got the potential to be really good elsewhere where you'd be going, oh, man, maybe they should have kept him. But if I'm working on a motion right now, I'm like, nah, I'm not paying him that much.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And based on what we came off of this last year, you know, just 10 games and 2 sacks. But you know what the other really solid thing about Unique Ngakoue? He was born on the same day as me, March 31st.
Mm. Well, that should slam the door
March
shut,
31st,
he's
1995.
In. He's in. You were born in 95.
It's no, great. No, not the exact birthday. Wish.
Yeah, I think I'm still smarting from the Justin Coleman because I felt like, yeah, you can't pay that guy that much. Cover corner, he was good, and then you saw what it was like without him. And I'm like, I wish they would have paid him. He really would have been a nice piece to have. He probably could have helped in a really big way.
Boy, they struggled with that position all year.
Yeah, so that's how I kind of feel about Reed. Like, he was, he had a brilliant year the year before. This past year was a bit of a disappointment.
He's going to be this year's Coleman.
Kind of.
That's what you're saying.
Kind of. But if you look at his career, he's had 1 year like that, and the other 3 are similar. So he's had 3 years that are similar and 1 outlier.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I agree with you, though. But you can check out the story that Jim wrote, 710sports.com.
710sports.com.
That's exactly right. See if you agree with Jim the way we do. All right. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll couldn't resist giving a trial rule a spin in the Pro Bowl. We'll talk about how that went and if we'd like to see that happen permanently in regular games during the season. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. A reminder that our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. It's the week of the Super Bowl. Man, people are going to just... That's the one good thing about not being at the Super Bowl. It's always fun to be out there in Radio Row and everybody out there, but you run out of things to say about the game at some point. You can only break it down so far. And at some point, you're just like, I got no material. I got nothing left on this matchup. Got
to just play the game.
Kind of, but every guest you bring on, you're, hey, what do you think? Who do you favor? Yeah. You're kind of getting into that same conversation. That's the only thing I don't miss. I love being out there. It's always a great time, especially in New York when we're out there. But
man, that was fun.
But boy, you when you're isolating one game for an entire week.
Yeah. I enjoyed the one time I went down to Arizona for that week. And, I don't remember it being anything. I mean, you can't talk too much about that game, though. It's a final game, best two teams.
Yeah.
And there might be things that you cover that, you know, you cover two or three times, but there might be listeners that haven't heard it the first two or three times, you know, so.
All right.
We did two shows a day. We
Dave and I did two shows a day, so we really taxed that material.
Wait a minute, how'd that work?
We were filling in for somebody. Who were we doing? We were filling in for somebody in the morning, then we'd go take a lunch break, and then we'd come back and do an afternoon show.
Oh, okay.
Midday show.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, they're always bringing guests to you, too.
Yeah, okay. That part's great. It's all great. That's I'm nitpicking. Nitpicking. It's just you get to a point where you're like, man, I got nothing new to say about this game. Yeah. You just need to play it. Meanwhile, we talked about the rule changes, proposed rule changes, things like that. And we saw one of the rule changes that they're proposing out there in the Pro Bowl. 4th and 15 is a down that they'll give you in place of an onside kick
from your own 25.
Yeah. So if you can convert on 4th and 15. You get a fresh set of downs. It's like recovering an onside kick. And we saw it take place yesterday with Pete Carroll calling for it because the NFC was trailing. So in that case, they'd go onside kick, but they went with the 4th and 15, and here's how it sounded.
So say goodbye onside kick. New experimental rule. Here it is, a 4th and 15. Kirk Cousins to try to keep the ball. He wants more than 15. And it is intercepted. It is Earl Thomas who's now returning the 4th and 15 attempt and laterals the ball to his teammate Marlon Humphrey, who laterals it again. As now they are blowing it dead.
You know what would have been great? You told me that Earl just leveled him at one point. What if Kirk just came back and leveled Earl on the interception return? Just a little payback. But I didn't watch the game. I'm not going to pretend I saw the play.
Yeah,
sounded like maybe he had somebody open 15 yards, but he said, oh, he wants more.
So I didn't see anybody open. They showed
it
from the end zone.
Okay.
So it didn't look like anybody was open. So he just chucked it.
What do you think of that play, though?
I think it's so stupid that they can't just go back to the onside kick. We had this argument with Clayton, and it was mind-numbing. I had to go pound my head against the wall afterwards because, look, it's just one time, and it's not like it's going to be happening all the time. So can we possibly just ditch safety for just one play?
So you're talking about going back to being able to
overload the side.
Overload the side and get a running start too?
Yeah. Well, look, if you want to make it so it's only a 1 yard run up, okay, fine. I mean, it's still, but you overload the side there. But I don't know what they're trying to do there. I mean, I don't know why that's so unsafe. And then Clayton was saying, well, you take away the surprise factor. Well, 90% of the time, it's done when you know it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming.
I think it's 98% of the
time. Yeah, probably.
How often are we like, whoa, did you onside kick?
They hardly ever do that. I mean, every once in a while a coach will try that when they see a guy leaving early. But, yeah, why not just ditch safety, okay, and just bank on maybe there will be one concussion, but it's still a great play, man.
Well, how many times did we see people getting hurt on that particular play? I'm not saying it never happened. Certainly people could maybe point it out. But compared to kickoffs or punt returns, that I don't recall seeing injuries on an onside kick.
Yeah,
it just does not stand out to me.
The risk reward is just it's just too great. I mean, it's not that much of a risk, and it's a huge reward. And the 4th and 15, that doesn't look anything like football. All of a sudden, you're going to arbitrarily throw them out on what yard line? Did you pull that out of your tailpipe? We're going to have it from the 25, and we're going to make it 4th and 15. Why not 4th and 12?
Man, I think there's more risk of injury on that play.
Yeah, sure, exactly. You know, I mean, and same thing, what about punts? There's guys running down. So they just, I don't know. To me, it's all a big show that the NFL, they're trying to show. I think Roger Goodell is scared of the moms out there. You're always talking about, well, we don't want the moms not letting their kids play football. Well, I mean, even if it drops off 10%, 15%, there's still a ton of football players out there. It's, you know, to me, I think that they're kind of cowing to, you know, that, or I would say, cowering, I guess, to the threat that all of a sudden the supply chain is going to dry up for, you know, football players. But I'd say I'd be more worried about the demand than the supply side, because if you start putting a crappy product out there and two-hand touch, you know, and that's when it gets to that point, it's like, look, man, you got a bigger problem. But, you know, obviously the NFL is very popular still.
Yeah, I just...
But I worry about it going forward.
I'm with you on... Clayton just seemed to be it's all or nothing when it comes to the kicking rules, right? It's this rule applies to any time you're going to kick the ball. Anytime your foot touches that ball, all of these rules apply. You can separate. Okay, our safety rules will apply to kickoffs and punts and those things, but the onside kick is what it is.
It's special.
Yeah, it's because, again, I would love to see the numbers on injuries. I would love it because I don't think it applies. I do not. But they treat it as if, man, this has just been a dangerous play. There have been so many injuries on onside kick. I need to see those numbers. I don't recall seeing guys laying there after that kick.
I don't either. But the way it was this year, I read Bob Condotta's story in the Seattle Times this morning. 8 out of 56 onside kicks were recovered. It's a higher percentage than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going the other way with this. I like what they're doing. 4th and 15. I think it's kind of fun.
I think you're going to find more injuries there.
Well,
you're going to have a guy going across the middle, the ball's hanging in the air for a long time.
I'm not talking about injuries. I'm just talking about
impetus for this, though.
But if you're the team that's behind, let's say you're down 20 points, and if you're successful on 4th and 15, you go down and score, then you try another 4th and 15, you score again, the defense is going to end up getting tired on the other team, you're going to have a better chance of coming back. I think we're going to see, if you're down 3 scores, we might see a team actually come back this way, where the onside kick, no matter how you run it, whether you go back to the old way of doing it or the new way, I don't really see you recovering 3 onside kicks in a row.
Which do you think is more likely, that you convert 4th and 15 or you recover an onside kick?
Well, I guess you'd have to look at the numbers on it. But
what'd you say it was?
I guess off the top of my head.
8 of 56.
8 of 56.
So if you had 56 4th and 15s, do you think there'd be more than 8
conversions? Probably. Yeah. I would think so. You think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there would be.
I'm already thinking of like some of the plays that I might run, because if they drop everybody to the sticks to 15 yards deep, you could run like a middle screen, get some linemen out in front of a running back and just plow through. Or, you know, there's lots of different little, you know, and it would probably help develop that. But to me, it's just so arbitrary that it's a kickoff and you're going to substitute it for a 4th and 15. And well, how'd they come up with that number? 15.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why not 10? Why not 12? Why not 13?
Maybe the odds or the numbers say those are converted too easily, so you got to make it harder.
They made it at a certain percentage. Yeah, that could be.
All right, we're going to come back. We'll speak with the professor. He's live in South Beach in Miami. Get his take on the scene. See how he's feeling about the matchup day one. That's all coming up. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
There's a lot of power on this show. We're sharing knowledge every day, and knowledge is power, Jim.
That's right.
That's right.
We are.
What did we learn today, Maura?
We learned some interesting things from John Clayton on what he thinks it means to be or talk Canadian.
In fact, I know I'm going to get bombed on the field by him. You know, once I go down to the field, because he wants me to do a Canadian accent, so I got to get that. And again, he wants me to talk Canadian.
Nice.
Okay, can you give us a
boot?
Go ahead and practice a little bit, John. You want to try and practice?
Got to do a little bit of music. Got that going. And then, of course, I got to do, yeah, I don't know a boot that. I got to do one of those.
Yeah. Say, what's this about?
Yeah. I'll take any suggestions.
All right, I'll work some.
You gotta throw in an A.
I'll text him.
Throw in an A.
Text him to you, John, later on.
What was that song? What was that song?
That's Take Off to the Great White North. It was a song, and that was the beginning.
Oh, I thought he was doing the jazz flute from Techno Thursday. We were talking about Luke Wilson.
Oh, no. I think he was doing that. Remember SCTV? And what was it called?
Oh, that was Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Bob and
right?
Doug McKenzie, exactly.
Okay.
And I think
okay.
they did something with like Rush, maybe, because Rush is Canadian. But there was a song that started out
that way.
Yeah,
Take Off, You Hosers, all that.
Yeah. So okay. Clayton actually was...
Now it's coming back.
He was close.
Yeah, I was totally lost on that. I'm like, I don't know what song he's trying to sing here.
You think you were lost. Jim.
Yeah, I was lost there. So Luke Wilson's going to be interviewing the professor, and he's going to be doing this for everyone in Canada to see.
Yeah, Luke's, he's been down there in the past. Remember, he was the one that was talking about the locker room after Super Bowl 49 and how there was mad guys and sad guys, guys punching the wall and guys crying. And, yeah, it was just, but he's been down there with, I hope it wasn't, was it Barstool Sports?
No, he's
Sports?
There with a Canadian TV network. Oh, okay. But I think he did go on the Barstool podcast. Yeah. That's what you're talking about. Jessamine and I spotted him last year on the opening night, and we ran up to him with a cell phone and made him talk to you guys.
Oh, that's
right. We were
like,
hey, wait, we need you to call into Danny David Moore.
Awesome.
I hope he comes back. Oh. Just because he's such a good dude. I mean, player-wise, I don't know how you feel his season went. But
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, he had a couple of times where they left him in to block. He's a good blocker. But, I would love to have him here. But... all good things have to come to an end.
What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned that Jim is probably in some trouble.
Wyman is a saintly bro with an exemplary quality about him. And I just wrote back to the 360, hey, 360, and hopefully Kathy's not listening. If Dave were married to my wife, things might be different.
Oh.
Thanks for listening.
Jim, again, the couch is open.
Oh, my gosh.
You can have free access. Make yourself at home in the refrigerator.
She's not listening.
That might become a bigger reality than you think, Dave.
Well, my limit is a week. Oh, you can live with us for Jim. A week.
A week?
You got to patch things up.
I respect your honesty, but sometimes some things are better left unsaid.
Well, Jim. Since I'm already in the hole here, we'll get to Michael Bumpus.
Well, and Maura, you just doubled the chances that Kathy
played it
could
again.
Be listening to this.
Well, you could,
I couldn't not replay that for
you're one right.
You
right
could stay a week at my house, so you can stay a week at Dave's and then a week with me if this really goes on.
This came about because Dave said that he's only told Shannon shut up once in 28 years.
And you were dumbfounded. Once?
I know.
When's the last time you did it, Jim? I don't know. Probably this weekend with some other words attached to it.
Well, I know it's not cool to say shut up to your wife. I do know that. But
everybody's got a different dynamic they work with.
There was a texter that said you made them feel better, like they weren't alone.
I love that. If they were married to my wife, it would be different.
Oh, it would require a Herculean effort to not say that to Kathy at some point. I would challenge anyone.
Quit while you're ahead, Jim.
Oh, Jim. So
I don't think I'm ahead.
No, he's just lagging further behind.
I would quit, but I'm not ahead.
So just keep digging deeper? Is that your motto?
The shovel is big here.
Can't get any worse.
Oh. I like gambling on her not listening.
Does she ever listen? Honestly.
Yeah, she does. Like, she took the kids to basketball practice tonight. And
oh, boy.
I have to say, my wife's very supportive. And
she listens.
Never.
Really? Yeah.
No.
Oh. She doesn't hear all the good things
Ever.
You say. The saintly bro. I like that. Dave's a saintly bro.
I'll make sure that she finds out about that.
Yeah. What else did we learn?
We learned that Dave is unmoved by the Masters theme song.
I cannot stand the music they play for that. That dramatic piano
music. Yeah, I kind of like it.
I'm supposed to bust out crying or something when I hear that.
Come
it's not getting
on.
Anybody fired
it's
up.
It's more nostalgic. It's more just you're thinking about it. You're
thinking
back.
I get goosebumps every time they play it.
I don't get that. I just kind of enjoy
Here's
it.
Here's what I got for it. Okay? That's what I think about your
Dave
master.
Dave hates the Masters.
Master music.
A tradition unlike any other.
Wait, we were just starting with it. There we go.
Dave just gave it the
Thank
raspberry.
You,
I
hate you, Matt.
Do you watch golf at all? Aww. Like, is there any golf tournament that you watch, or you just...
No.
No?
No.
You never watch it at all?
No. You know why? It's boring.
You ever listen to The Golf Show?
Yeah, Matt is fantastic.
The golf show is not boring.
Matt, as Danny liked to say, Matt's the only guy that's ever made any money on the golf show.
Hey, Matt will vouch for this. There was one day, even if you think the golf show is boring, there was one day when I forgot I was supposed to be here at 10 o'clock. And Matt's laughing because that was not boring that day. You should have seen me on I-90.
You got a talking to, huh?
For some reason, I thought, I was in the shower, and then I was like, oh, my God, it's 10 o'clock. And the show started at 10. I was off an hour. It was like I was on Mountain Time or something, or Hawaii time. And, boy, I came racing in. And
did you get a talking to?
Sean was not happy. Sean Crew, not happy.
Just another in a long list of people Jim has gotten under.
I don't blame her, though. You know, it's funny, I really screwed up.
Different reaction that I got from you when I was late by a half an hour, because Jim was giving me this look like, I'm going to make you pay for this for the next umpteen years.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And
he has.
That was like 2 years ago.
He'll continue still to bring it up.
Still letting me hear about it.
That was my favorite Dave Wyman story of all time.
Yeah, you're not going to let that one go, are you?
No.
No, you won't.
No. And it's guaranteed, if it was the other way around, he wouldn't let go of it either.
Maybe he'd break it out in special occasions.
Like those countless times you're wandering the hallways when the show's going on.
Just standing in the newsroom
through the window,
speaking. No sense of urgency whatsoever.
I guess I have a show.
Did we learn anything else?
Changes the subject.
Yeah.
You do like to change. We learned that Jim likes to change the subject when it becomes too much about him.
Yes. Yeah.
That's true.
Did we learn anything else?
No, that's
it. That was it. All right. That's it, Jim.
Short
on
learning.
Today. Let me know if you need a place to stay. All right. That does it for us. Our thanks to John Clayton and Michael Bumpus for joining us on the program. If you missed anything, head to 710sports.com. Click that podcast button. Scroll down to our picture. Click there. Everything you missed each and every day is right there for you. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I mean, sometimes I lack passion, but I do. I admit it.